really loud voice. Let me introduce myself first of all. I grew up in Old Brooklyn, and I still just love it, even though I haven't lived there a long time. Grew up at the corner of Tampa and Broaddale, right around the corner from the school gardens. I would just go around in the morning and go through the path and go to Benji. So I had went to Benji for 8 years, had a school garden, of course, and went to Rhodes, and married, had three children, did all the good mother stuff, PTA president, Girl Scout leader, Sunday school teacher, and moved to Houston, and back to Parma Heights, to Chicago, to Akron, and then back to Parma. So I floated around a bit. Worked for a printing company as an account executive, and my kids all flew the coop. One in North Carolina, one in South Carolina, one in Dayton, who my daughter dearly wanted to be here tonight. We do the genealogy together, but she couldn't come. Ran our class reunion for 30 years. Started doing genealogy in 1968. We were moving to Chicago. My kids were teenagers, and we had lots of family here in Cleveland, and I wanted the kids to always feel like they were surrounded by their family, feeling that if kids feel responsible to Aunt Marie and Uncle Alan and Aunt Helen, that they'd be less likely to go astray. So that's why and how I started the genealogy. My daughter and I do it together. I volunteer at the county archives and belong to the computer-assisted genealogy group and also the Cuyahoga Valley genealogy group, so I managed to get around. Well, the Hinckleys. I think that maybe they're a dynasty all in themselves. And when you look at the charts, they're just the briefest beginning picture I could do for you, because now they're scattered throughout the United States. So I know you want to hear about Old Brooklyn and Isaac Hinckley, but I have to tell you a little bit about how they came here. So Samuel Hinckley and his wife Sarah came in 1637 on the Hercules from England. And they settled in Massachusetts. And when you look at these charts, look at them carefully. They were very prolific. The guys would have 6, 8, sometimes 10 children, and the poor wife would die, and they'd marry, and they'd have 6, 8, 10 more children. So Samuel's oldest son, Thomas, was the last president of the Plymouth Colony before it became the state of Massachusetts, and many times they talk about him as being the first governor of Massachusetts. So then, and you'll see my little red lines over here on the chart, so I hope later you'll glance at them at least. So from Samuel, then we're descended through John Ensign, and then to Gershom, who moved to Connecticut. So our branch goes, becomes the Connecticut branch, and then there's a descendant of John, and John had our Isaac Hinckley. Now, Isaac was born in 1773 and married another Sarah in 1899, and had seven children. The first was born in 1800, Emily Smith. Listen for the middle names of these children. They did a great deal in carrying forward their ancestors. Smith was the maiden name of Isaac's mother. Then the second child, Abel Shepherd, and it was a shepherd that was his wife's maiden name. And so it goes. Abel was born in 1803, Ogden in 1804, Lucy Champion was born in 1807. Champion was the name of the man that Isaac's older sister married. Then we have Cleantha in 1809, Sarah Ann in 1811, and Oramel in January of 1814. And a few months later, this family with seven children and a baby maybe 6 months old sets off for the new land. Now, I think all of us are familiar with the Connecticut Western Reserve, Connecticut being the only state that was allowed to keep what they had reserved to the west. And so what Connecticut did, because they didn't want to handle that land themselves, sold it to the Connecticut Land Company. And so two men by the name of Lord and Barber were the agents that you see on the early deeds so often. So Isaac and his Brainerd neighbors set off for this new land. Now, how many of you would set off in a wagon pulled by oxen for 6 weeks to go through forest, over rivers, with a baby that was that old? Think about the courage. Would we be tough enough to have done it? I think we have to look back and not just look at what they did, but really think about what it was like to do it. So it was going to be a 6 week journey. When they got as far as very close to Niagara Falls, they were so close they could hear the roar of the falls, but they really didn't want to stop on their journey to come to the Western Reserve. So they continued on. As they were going in that area, Isaac saw a cannonball that had been shot out in the War of 1812. And so he picked it up as kind of a souvenir. And ultimately, it was donated to the Brooklyn Museum, and they have it. So here is Isaac Hinckley with his family. It had two wagons, one piled high with their furniture, especially a loom, and a spinning wheel, very essential when you're in the wilderness. And they also had a horse and a dog. They got to the border around Euclid in the early fall. And the trustees of Cleveland were quite alarmed. Who were these immigrants? They didn't want any paupers to come and the trustees be responsible and have to support them. So they sent for the constable. They were going to send them back or someplace. Alonzo Carter heard of this, and he went to them and he said, are you kidding? Probably didn't say that, but it's what he meant, right? This group of 40 people with the, there were six families, the Brainerds, Isaac Hinckley, Stephen Young, are probably worth much more than all of you trustees put together.
That's right.
So they could go on their way. Isaac rested for a week, and while the Brainerds and Young went on to Parma, to Brooklyn, and of course the Brainerds is a very familiar name, and so they were among the first. And then Isaac, at one point, got as far as Public Square, thought the soil was a bit too sandy to farm. Now, he could have bought land from East 9th up to East 55th, and for almost the same value as what he ultimately bought. Just think, we could have been on Easy Street. he started toward Brooklyn and went in a long shaft road. Now, for a minute, wipe away all these buildings and think what this was like when they came. It was forested in many areas, very thick forests. So it was virgin land, but you had to do something with it if you were going to farm. And imagine also, there weren't roads here. This was brand new territory. So, you know, sometimes when I'm driving along in Pennsylvania, and a couple of times when I've gone to New York, and you go over these hills and you see these lovely valleys, and I have thought to myself, imagine taking an oxen-drawn wagon and going up the hill and then trying to keep it from going down the other side of the hill or mountain. So we can appreciate it with our cars, but what a journey. Isaac had traded his land in Connecticut for 360 acres on what became Shaft Road. initially, there was no house there to greet them. So initially, they had to keep fires burning to keep the animals away. And at night, while Isaac was building the cabin, they could hear in the darkness leaves crinkling, twigs breaking. They knew that particularly the wolves were going by because there were bear, deer, panthers, wolves, and a number of wild animals. In addition, there were Indians. They were supposed to be friendly Indians, but they felt a bit concerned. They weren't sure. So that also was a bit scary. The first cabin that Isaac built had two rooms and a loft and a huge chimney and fireplace. And the children slept in the loft. And at night they could look up through the cracks and count the stars. Of course, in the wintertime, the snow came through in abundance and covered their beds and the floor. Can't you imagine what it was like? If we could, and I've thought of it, I don't believe in seances, but wouldn't you love to have a seance with Emily, the oldest, because she was 14, and Abel, who was 11, and say, what was it like? Because you can imagine that Emily had to be a big help to her mother, helping with the baby. And I suspect that Abel grew up long before his time. Do any of you have 11-year-olds? Can you imagine? I imagine that he helped his father with a lot of things. The first year was a tough year. They had brought provisions, but they started to get low on the provisions, and Isaac went to the miller in Newburgh. At the corner of Broadway and Warner. And Isaac said to the miller, I don't have money, but how about if I give you a mortgage for 100 acres? The miller said, no thanks. The barrel of flour is worth more. You are land poor. Somehow they scraped through the coming months, killing game as they could. One day, Isaac was out chopping wood, and all of a sudden he looked up and there was a bear right there. So he dodged back and forth, dodging behind the trees, got to the back door and rushed in, grabbed his gun, and shot the bear. And so for the Hinckleys, ever after, the house 939 Shaft Road in the backyard, for them is always marked as the place where Isaac Hinckley shot the bear in his own backyard. The first schoolhouse on the south side of Cleveland was inaugurated by the two oldest Hinckley girls. That would be Emily and Lucy. And they started off with only four students, and one would teach one day and one would teach another day. Later on, I have a letter that was written by Isaac, and you think about the normal education that people had at that time, because here was Emily with probably minimal education herself. They were a religious family. They went to church. When they went to church, it was a mile or two away, and so they would carry their shoes and socks, because you can't imagine traipsing through woods. They wouldn't last very long. So even the adults did that. Their first neighbor was Edwin Foote, who took the land right next to him. He was awarded 640 acres because he had helped do the surveying originally for the Connecticut Land Company. So these two settlers controlled everything north and south of Schaff Road from West 11th all the way to where Schaff Road went down the hill. They had at one point put a wagon trail from Broadview Road all the way to Independence Road. So when after they put that wagon trail through, initially anybody whose land abutted the road just took care of the road that was in front of them. And then ultimately, they did put a plank road down. Now, some of you may know the story, but I'm going to repeat it anyway in case you haven't heard how and why Schaff Road got its name. Not heard it. Okay. A German family moved in, and their house was on Schaff Road, very close to where Schaff ran into Broadview. Now, the Schaff family had 9 children, and those children were out and about the neighborhood and so on, and so everybody got to know the Schaff children. So if you went to the store or something, they say, well, now where do you live? Well, everybody knew the Schaff children. Schaff Road. And that's the story that everybody tells as to how Schaff Road got its name. Isaac Hinckley was involved in many of the civic affairs, being one of the early settlers. And he was a township trustee. You know that the area was broken up into townships. There was Brooklyn Township, there was Rockport, and so on. Initially, after they came here, they started holding services in the house of Moses Fish. And then with Isaac and his wife Sarah and two Brainerd families, they were the initial starting of one of the first churches in this whole area. And in fact, Isaac was the first deacon for this church. Now, initially, when it started, it was under the auspices of the Presbyterians. And then about 1850, slid over and became a congregational church. Now, you may know it, or at least knew it, by the name of Archwood Congregational Church. And so the story of how Isaac was instrumental in helping to start the church was likewise there. One of the sort of serendipity things, when I was growing up, I went to Brooklyn Heights Congregational Church. And at the time I went there, it was a small house on Dorner, very close to Schaff Road. And so when my husband and I were engaged and we looked at the church, and he had a lot of Hartzell relatives, and we looked at it and thought, well, they're not all going to squeeze in there. So we kind of looked around, and the closest church was Archwood Congregational Church. And so we made arrangements, and we got married in Archwood Congregational Church. Now, it was only years later that I got interested in the genealogy, and here we had been married in the church that part of my husband's family goes back to. Isn't that serendipity? So anyway, so I, and of course now it's United Church of Christ. Have to give you a little idea of what it was like. I was, as we did our genealogy, we found a relative in Kansas, and I'll fill you in later on how that all went about. But this relative had all these letters either written by Isaac Hinckley or sent to the Hinckleys by relatives. You know, as primitive as it was in difficulty, I mean, you know, you couldn't get in a car and go there in one day. Obviously, it was about a 6-week trip, and yet relatives came, and relatives went back to visit their relatives in Connecticut. So this is a bit of a translation. Now, I put a copy of the original letter here on the board, and then somebody translated it once, and I translated it a second time, and even so, there were words I could not make out. So the language and the system of living is kind of spelled out here. It's the letter was sent to Phineas Shepherd, who Cleantha had married, August 14th, 1929. Dear children, I now sit myself down to inform you of my situation. And by the way, if you look at how the words are spelled. I think it either wasn't taught or they just didn't spend that much time in school working on spelling. So some of us would have been very happy, except when we wrote a letter. Your mother has taken unwell. The next day after we set out from home, she was taken with a chill soon after we crossed Chagrin River. And Chagrin was spelled something like S-H-E something or another. We drove as far as possible, and then we made a stop at a tavern. Now, one of the things I did too is the reason for the map on the board here is to show I've circled the stops that they made in Ashtabula County. She laid down on a bed. I got her warming drinks. She got some rest. And then we started and got as far as Matarion, whatever. I don't know if there's a place or what it was. And then put up with Squire Freeman to his friends. She still felt a mite ill. I called in a doctor that was nearby. He did something, her pulse, and said she would feel better the next morning. She accordingly was and said she could ride as far as Harper's Field, which was about 7 miles to Mr. Whelan's. When we got there, she felt better and wanted to go further. We then started and went to Mr. Liebus Hills at Kingsville, 14 miles. She then felt poorer. I sent for a doctor the next morning. He told me she had the fever. She has been very sick, but is now feeling some better. The doctor says that she is in a fair way to get well. That must be pretty good. Mr. Hill's people are very kind, and the neighbors are very, very attentive and kind to us. Don't you give yourself great uneasiness about us, for I think that we shall soon be able to return home again. I want you to write to me as soon as you possibly can and let me know how they do at home and how Emily does. Your affectionate father, Isaac Hinckley. And the address on the envelope just said Phineas Shepherd, Cuyahoga County, Brooklyn Township. And obviously they didn't have addresses. Now you all know that they always had to go to the post office until the Civil War. And Cleveland had a postmaster by the name of Briggs, and he saw these wives of the men who were serving in the Civil War, and they had to come from wherever they lived to get a letter from whoever was serving. And he thought that was such a burden for them, and he's the one who started home delivery. Yay for Cleveland. When Isaac retired, the farm was divided between the three sons. Isaac died in 1852 at the age of 79, and his wife Sarah died in 1858. Now, Emily Smith is the one that my husband and my kids, therefore, are related to. She married a Myrick Gould who came to Newburgh in 1818. And when we lined up the Hinckley land and the Gould land, we could see that they could stand across a creek and kind of wave, and we figured that's probably how the romance started.
Sure.
But we'll get back to that story, because I've got to tell you how we're related, and a bit that story also has its adventure, its romance, tragedy, and is a story. Abel Shepherd, the oldest son, married Sarah Dennison, had five children, stayed on the land. Ogden married Julia Ross and also was a farmer. Cleantha married Phineas Shepherd, and his name is mentioned very frequently in different civic things. Sarah Ann married Clark Gates, and in the Brooklyn area you see and hear a lot about the Gates dynasty as well. The Hinckleys, Isaac and Sarah, and one of their children are buried around the corner here. Primarily, there are many, many Gates in that cemetery, if you've ever been there. It's a lovely cemetery, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And have you all been there? The last of the children was Oramel, the one born in 1814. He decided to cut bait, I guess, and in 1844 went out to Clinton County, Iowa. And there he and his wife had, hold your breath, 16 children. And his wife still lived after that. Well, and you know what? Think about it. They didn't know about sterilization and washing your hands, and the women who lived were very fortunate. Okay, now for the end of the story. What I did is I kind of showed you the beginning of the Hinckleys up to Isaac, and then I ran with dates in the middle, the Isaac's family. Now, it's not all of Isaac's family. I just took Ogden's, and this is Ogden's chart as far as I could go up to today. So if I had tried to do that starting with Samuel, I probably would have had a bed sheet. So the last chart over here shows the how my husband is related to the Hinckleys. Okay. Emily married Myrick Gould, and her daughter was Lucy Gould. And in 1853, and by the way, that's Lucy.
Huh.
She lived a long time. She was born in 1834, died, I think it was 1926, so she was in her 90s. She married a man called George Gerard, and they had heeded the call of go west. So off they went to Kansas, to Lawrence, Kansas, and set out to homestead there. They got 160 acres and a land paper that I got said that George was doing very well. He was fulfilling the requirements. He had set out 40 fruit trees. He had built a cabin that had one door, one window, and a dirt floor. And to support the family and be able, along with farming, to support the family, George worked in town. And now at that time, this was 1862, they were going through this slave or free state business. And it was a very radical topic. There were gangs on either side, in Kansas and in Missouri, raiding back and forth, trying to influence how the state was going to go. And one of the gangs was Quantrell. And one day, Quantrell came into town, into Lawrence, Kansas, and killed all the men in town, including George Gerard. And Lucy told of how apparently the word had gotten that Quantrell was raiding in Kansas. And so Lucy always told about hiding herself and the three children because they were back on the land in the cornfield as Quantrell went through. So Lucy couldn't continue to take care of the children on the farming and all. So she came back to Cleveland and went into a boarding house, and there she became a dressmaker to support herself and her children. In that boarding house also lived a handsome fireman just out from the Civil War, Oliver Hartzell. Aha! And that's where we stem from. So, Lucy's two sons died fairly young, but her daughter was Emily. Sound familiar? And throughout the chart, you'll see names repeated again and again. Emily went back to Lawrence, Kansas, married a man there, and when my daughter and I started researching all this, we went out to Kansas, and that's where I got copies of all the Hinckley letters. When we had talked, she said she had Lucy's Bible, and she got it out of the vault and talked about giving it to me, but she changed her mind, so I didn't get Lucy's Bible. So my husband was the 10th generation from Samuel. He died in 1976. But I've continued to do the genealogy as a heritage for my children. the last of the Hinckleys, who live on Schaff Road, Howard Hinckley, died in 2006. His wife, Jane, still lives there. She's up in years. So we have my little project board with the letter, the chart, the map. Now I've got to tell you about a real serendipity thing. One day my neighbor across the street was having a garage sale. Now Rich and his wife had had an antique store, and he still went out and picked up things and stuff, but it was a lot of garage sale stuff. So I went to see what Rich had. And so I'm looking around and I see this strange thing. What a strange frame. Whoever saw a frame like this? Well, it just looked like boards. And so I looked a little closer and I said, gee, that looks like a it's the Hinckleys! Can you believe? I ran home, I got my chart, I called my daughter and Dayton, I said, you won't believe this. There's a Hinckley chart at my neighbor. She said, whatever he wants, pay for it. So I did, and so I have it. I haven't taken it anywhere to see what it might be worth or anything, because I'm sure it only it was created in the 1800s. So what I did today, I have two Hinckley books just crammed with census and obituaries and bits of this and that and the other thing. So feel free to, and the letters. And I brought the Archwood book and my special plaque. I did one other thing for my children, and it doesn't really have to do with history, or maybe it does. My children were in college when my husband passed away, and so 1 year for Christmas, I sat and wrote and wrote and wrote and gathered up every photograph, every piece of paper relating to my husband, and put it in a biography of him. And so that was my gift. I made a book for each one of my children, and one for me, so I'd know what I said. And so I brought it just maybe as an inspiration for any of you. So, and if you're wondering where I gathered this all up, Jane, although I knew her from when we went to Rhodes, is not that amenable to sit down with. So the thing, I got information from a book called History of Cuyahoga County, written in 1879, and some of the stories come from that, by Chris Field Johnson. There's a wonderful book about the early days of Cleveland, Memorial to the Pioneer Women of the Western Reserve, written in 1896. And then the wife of Alfred Hinckley put together a family booklet written in 1950. that Howard Hinckley had sent me before he passed away. And so a number of the stories that I've told you tonight are from that as well. So that's my story. And I hope I added a little bit to your knowledge of the Hinckleys and early Brooklyn, because it is so fascinating. So
thank you very much.
Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, anybody have any questions? Yes.
I'm looking here, but I believe that the frame on your plaque there is the same thing that they used for molding on the ceiling.
Really?
That's the same thing that's in the house off of Shaft Road. And I had to take it down and to strip it because somebody painted it. And I'm looking at that and I'm I think that's what it is. Another, I have a question too.
Sure.
I don't know her name, and my girlfriend, I wish my girlfriend was here, but my girlfriend is a Foot. She's part of the Foot family.
Okay.
And she has an aunt that lives on Shaft Road, and I don't remember her name, but there's a cemetery in their backyard.
Yeah. It's at 201 Shaft Road. It's a blue house. And
what's her name?
I don't know, but if you look left, you can see the tombstones in the backyard.
If you read the old Brooklyn News this month, it said the whole story's in there.
Oh, is it?
Yes, we want to tell you, the history of Shaft Road is in the old Brooklyn News this month.
You know, I go to the genealogy group. I was there on Monday, and so Lynette Phillips is a part of that group, and she always brings the old Brooklyn News, which tickles me pink. And as I was, you were talking, and I was thinking about it, I grew up with what they called the Shaft Road Kids, and because a lot of the Shaft Road Kids went to Brooklyn Heights Congregational Church, and so I dated a Cassidy, I dated a Foot, and for a year I belonged to Pearl Road Methodist, and that's when I dated a Cassidy. So, you know, I knew all the Shaft Road Kids and families, and
Barb Richardson, whose husband passed away, their family has a quilt. I'm a quilter, so.
Oh, so is my daughter.
They have a quilt with the signatures of the Brainerds and a lot of the Shaft Road, and she has the diary that goes with it from 1792. But it's got all their signatures on it.
Oh, how wonderful. Because although you see the two notebooks loaded, when I started doing genealogy, and I originally talked to my husband's aunt, and she said, well, I really don't know much, except I know my daughter is the fifth Susan. Wow. And that's what I started with. And so to have two notebooks, and that's just the Hinckley. I've got two books on the Hartzells and then on other lines all the way. But the Hinckleys have just been so fascinating. And because of the number of children and all, and tracking them. And there was a great deal of closeness among them. A lot of the ones who, children of Oramil, ended up out in California. But all of them went back and forth, and eventually, many of the husbands had passed away, and the women got together and lived together and took care of each other.
Would the Hinckley family that you're from have any tie-ins with the township of Hinckley?
No. It was named for a judge. I don't remember now if he was ever here or not, but if the tie, certainly not with this family. I don't know if every Hinckley in the United States go back to Samuel. I'm not willing to do that much research. But, and certainly there was a Hinckley that was head of the Mormon church back a few years ago. So, Lori?
Do you know anything about a lady? School teacher in the 40s and 50s, named Hinckley. I'm sure she never married. Benjamin Franklin School.
Don't remember one. I know Huldah Richardson taught school there. Like I say, I was around the Shafro kids so much. And so... offhand, I don't. Lorene.
I just wanted to make a comment. This lovely lady told us the story of the Hinckley family. Chuck, wait a second. She told us the story of the Hinckley family, but those of you who have the book that we published last year from the Historical Society, her story is in the book. She's one of the people we interviewed. So if you don't have the book, you ought to get one. There's only 14 left because you can read her story.
Well,
and wonderful.
and Jane Hinckley's as well.
Right.
And I ended up getting a book for each of my children, and my daughter came up, and that's what she did on the way back to Dayton. She read the book. She called me up as soon as she got home. Mom! And so it really, and now that I've done my husband's biography, my kids have been saying, Mom, write your own. And I keep saying, if I'd only stay home long. But because, you know, when you think about your family pictures and excuse me,
bless you.
Oh, I surely am blessed tonight. And I usually sneeze twice. We'll try not to do it. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to give one the baby picture and one the high school picture? So I went out and copied every single picture and put them in and labeled them. And the high school graduation and so on. So each of the children would have it. And it was a lot of work, of course, but greatly, greatly appreciated. So thought you might enjoy seeing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one more thing with this. This is from February 16th. It's a newspaper article from the Brooklyn Parma News from 1950.
Hello.
And if you look real close,
oh,
it's her. Announcement, she's in her wedding date has been set.
Oh, thank you.